Chapter 22. When It Matters More. Catti Bree took a deep breath and rubbed her fingers together. Twilight Autun has passed, Azudanna assured her.
And I am still alive, said Zack,
who seemed perhaps a little worse off than he had been after the miracle of Quisticanze, but still so much better and stronger than he had been before that startling event.
I told you that you would not be rid of me so easily.
I shouldn't be nervous, but,
Catti Bree told him, your spells will be followed by my own, and by Galathea's, said Alina. We two alone could cure Zacnaphane of the Chaos Phage and restore his full health. We brought you here as a courtesy, and thought that you would prefer to begin Zacnaphane's healing.
I do,
and I appreciate the opportunity, Catti Bree replied.
She unfastened the pouch the paladin had given her, dumping a small bit of diamond dust into her hand. She closed her eyes and took another deep breath, then began to quietly chant to her goddess. She felt the magic growing within her, felt its beautiful release, and heard the profound sigh of comfort from Zack as the waves of restorative healing washed over him, attacking the Chaos Phage and bringing almost instantaneous relief. As soon as the last wave left her, she began anew, using a spell dedicated to healing wounds more than diseases. She placed both of her hands on Zack's still swollen shoulder and chanted, closing her eyes, feeling and freeing the warmth. She fell back when she was done, taking a moment to steady her balance and slowly opening her eyes. The smiling Zack stood before her, the swelling gone, his face back to normal. Catti Bree heard Alina and Galathea whispering behind her, but she didn't turn around, instead accepting a great hug from the weapon master.
You scared us so badly, she whispered into his ear.
I know. I'm so sorry to put... She pulled back and pressed her fingers over his lips, silencing him.
I'm not letting you go anywhere.
Bree needs you.
Driz needs you. I need you.
Zack hugged her again,
but then made a curious, questioning sound. Catti Bree looked at him, then followed his gaze back behind her to the two Avendrau women, both standing with their jaws hanging open, their matching expressions showing no small amount of shock.
He is fully healed and fully cured, Galathea said when she found her voice. This I did not expect.
Your power is great, Alina added.
It is given by Mialiki, Catti Bree replied.
I am but the conduit.
A powerful conduit, Galathea said.
Catti Bree accepted the compliment with a humble shrug. Galathea pulled her aside, motioning for Alina to go to Zack and examine him more closely. To distract him, Catti Bree knew, when the paladin whispered to her.
Strong enough to resist my Gias? She asked.
I know little about your spell, about that particular spell, I mean, Catti Bree answered. But I have no desire to resist it. I accept it, and on my word will not betray Caladay in any case. I do not like what you believe you must do, both with this spell and the one you soon intend. But I cannot argue the prudence.
The paladin nodded.
We must go now, Galathea told Zack.
Your other friends will find you soon.
They are on their way to you.
Catti Bree will return to you a bit later on.
She led Catti Bree and Alina out of the infirmary and across the city. They passed Entrary and Jarlaxle at one point, and Catti Bree winked at them and smiled, sending the two running in anticipation of finding a healthy Zack.
Catti Bree kept glancing back at them as they rushed along. She wanted to join them, wanted the travelers all together again.
It won't take long, Galathea assured her, obviously catching on to her anxiousness.
Catti Bree didn't complain, but her jaw clenched.
This is on your agreement, yes? Galathea asked.
Have I a choice?
The paladin stared at her hard.
Do you want one?
Catti Bree considered it, chewing her lip.
It is very temporary, and it will merely prevent you from taking yourself and your friends back to your homeland for a short while,
Galathea explained once more.
And a Gias is about intent, not merely about this spell or that action.
You have said to me several times now that you would not betray Caladay.
If that is your truth, and the Geas does nothing you claim you wouldn't already do. That is where I must trust you.
Yes, Galathea answered. Caddybree didn't reply.
We saved him, Galathea told her. I mean, you cured and healed him now, but we would have, and had it not been for the people of Caladae and Catscalchi.
I know, she replied, holding up her hand.
Understand something, Caddybree, Galathea told her and locked stares with her. I could have had you bound and gagged. The hagfish mucus is quite adequate for both, until this time when my magic returned, and forced the Geas upon you without your acquiescence. That is not something that I or any of us wish to do to you or your friends, who have brought so much of interest to us.
Caddybree couldn't dispute the truth of Galathea's words, so, wary as she remained, she nodded her agreement. She owed them this. Caddybree rubbed her temples as she exited the Inquisitor house, Galathea beside her.
You feel it in there, buzzing? The Avendrow paladin asked.
I do. It is very strange.
It will diminish into the background of your thoughts shortly, Galathea assured her.
I am glad you agreed.
I fear it foolish, Caddybree admitted. The spells you now block are ones that could extract me and my friends from the coming fight if it turns desperate.
All we ask of you and your friends is that you show us the cave, said Emelian, walking over with Elena, both clearly overhearing the remark. Both had sacks slung over their shoulders.
It could remove you or your friends as well, Caddybree said.
If you wish to prepare another word of recall, you may, Galathea told her. The Geas will not stop you. But the place of recall must be here in Caladae.
As I told you, the Geas is about intent, not a particular action.
You might think such a spell prudent, but...
But it will be unnecessary, Emelian said. We are bringing a powerful force. We are not strangers to these fights, and we do not intend to lose.
Of course, you are under no obligation to join in the battle at all, Elena added. So perhaps you can guide us to the cave entrance and recall yourself and your friends to the city and await our return. We would think no ill of you in that event. This is our fight.
Then it is ours as well, Caddybree answered without hesitation.
And indeed, she was shaking her head with her every word excusing her from the expected battle.
Do you think we have forgotten that you took us into your homes in our time of desperate need? Do you think we have forgotten Catscalchi and the merry dancers and what you, all of you, did for our beloved friend Zacnaphane? Your biggest challenge, Emelian, if you are leading the battle, will be to keep us from getting too far ahead in the fight. All we ask is that you arm us.
Ah, yes, that, Emelian said, nodding to Elena, who pulled the sack from her shoulder and handed it to Caddybree.
Your item, she explained. That is a most wonderful and clever belt buckle.
Caddybree fished about and found the belt, holding it up for them with a grin.
Thank you. I fashioned this at the great forge of Gontalgrim.
The bow is Tolmeril, the Heartseeker, whose creation, I believe, traces to the Eladrin. You will see it in action, I'm sure.
She bent over and again fished about in the sack.
But that is not the most favored of my possessions, she explained, standing back up and holding a beautiful onyx figurine.
I doubt you've had any success in trying to sort out the magic in this one. Elena and Emelian shrugged.
Do not be startled, Caddybree warned. I promise you are safe.
The three looked at her curiously, as did a few other nearby Caladaeans.
Caddybree second-guessed herself a couple of times on her impulsive decision, but eventually wound up back at the beginning. She closed her eyes and whispered,
Guinevar.
Not poison? Elena asked when the gray mist appeared and began swirling before the human woman.
Caddybree shook her head. No, no, not poison.
Oh, it is an artwork of smoke, Emelian said, as the swirling fog began to take shape.
But the last word of that remark came out as a gasp when the huge black panther arrived right before Caddybree, who reached down immediately and stroked the cat's head and ears, assuring Gwen that everything was peaceful and calm.
By the wind gods, Galathea gasped.
She is beautiful, Elena said.
Her name is Guinevar, Caddybree said.
I name you as my friend, and so she is your friend. She likes to be scratched just above the shoulder. Elena hesitantly moved toward the panther, but pulled back. When Emelian laughed, the priestess stepped forward again. And yes, Caddybree told them, Guinevar will join in the fight. She too was wounded in Zachnafane's battle in the lower chamber, I know, because she was banished to her astral home for recovery. Now she is healed, and quite angry with whatever it was that harmed her so. She'll get her revenge. Seeing Jarlaxle in his outrageous hat and eye patch once more brought a sense of normalcy to Caddybree, and she was surprised how much she appreciated that feeling. As enchanting as Caladay and the Avendrow had been, as strange and beautiful and wonderful all of this had proven, she had been away from home for a long time. She wondered if Bree would look different when she returned. They'd been gone for more than 40 days. Caddybree had lost track of time in those early days, with no real day or night to guide her, but she knew the date of the autumnal equinox they had witnessed at Catskalchy. In some ways, it felt as if she had just left her home, but in others, it seemed like she had been gone for months and months. She wanted to see Drizzt and Bree. She needed to kiss her husband. She needed to hold her child. She took the remaining seat at their table. The common room wasn't crowded this day for the first time since Catskalchy, but the streets outside remained full of Caladaeans, most sleeping on the grasses near the warm water of the many tributaries that crossed Shelobel. "I'm surprised they returned everything to me," Jarlaxle said. "Everything," Caddybree agreed, "even Guinevar. She is healed. I brought her to show my Avendrow friends, but dismissed her right after, as I expect we'll be wanting her company soon enough."
"Not everything," Entreri answered.
Caddybree returned a curious glance only for a heartbeat, before catching on that there was no gauntlet on Entreri's right hand and no sword on his left hip. When she thought about it, she wasn't really surprised, for Karin's claw was among the most powerful and malignant of magical weapons she had ever seen, much more so than Cutter even. "Likely they're still trying to figure out the malice of that red blade," Caddybree told him. "I hope that none tried to hold it without the protective gauntlet.
Were that the case, then I doubt our hosts would have been so cheerful in returning our other items."
"You still have your dirk?" Caddybree asked Entreri. He pulled forth a signature jeweled dagger, spun it by its tip on the table, then gathered it up and slid it back into its sheath. Jarlaxle nodded at Caddybree, then turned back to their other two companions and continued, "It is a ritual, I would guess, and not one that pleases me."
"You must understand their reasoning," Zack said. "They've been more generous with us than we might ever expect. What do you think might have been the reaction had a group of Avendrow stumbled upon Menzo Berenzon? Or Waterdeep, even," Entreri added.
"What are you talking about?" Caddybree asked.
"Jarlaxle believes they intend to dull our memories of this place before they allow us to leave," said Zack.
"I would agree. Galathay has stated exactly that to me." She looked at Jarlaxle. "You think they did that to Freewindel?"
"Maybe he was just old," Entreri put in.
"I am sure that they did it to him," Jarlaxle replied. "They took his memories and blurred them or reshaped them into dreams, indistinct and without an anchor anyone might act upon."
"Act upon to find Caladay, you mean," Caddybree said. "Do you blame them?"
"Of course not."
"But that doesn't mean we have to like it," said Zachnafane. "I'm not too keen on allowing such an intrusion into my thoughts and memories."
"He has often wanted to murder Camoriel, I fear," Jarlaxle said lightly, drawing a laugh from Caddybree, but a glare from Zack.
"A common thought," Entreri remarked. "Isn't it possible that this elf you met was driven mad by the spell these Avendrow cast upon him?" Zack asked.
"Many thought him mad," the undeterred Jarlaxle continued, shaking his head. "But only in regard to this place. If it even was this place."
"Of course it was Caladay," said Caddybree.
"We do not know that. The world is full of coincidence. In truth, Freewindel was very old, ancient even, and he could not be sure of anything. Perhaps it had just been a dream. Freewindel was convinced it was, and then he was not, and then he was again. And certainly the old elf didn't tell me anything to match what we have witnessed here. And truly, I don't even know if this is the same place he dreamed of or visited. if he even did come north. Caddy Bree fixed him with a glare. Perhaps we could have had this conversation in the host tower in Luskin.
I did not lie to you, Jarlaxle protested. I merely did not reveal my hunch.
Your what?
My hunch, I say, for it was only that.
But you took us here on that hunch, she scolded.
Not on false pretense. No, Cazadea's sensations are real. Perhaps we will cleanse the sword, perhaps it cannot be done. But that was never the point, after all. Dumweel is alive, the sword tells us. Finding her is still paramount to me. Do not underestimate her value in the cause of Menzo Berenzon. If she can help us keep Barriss and Delarmgo allied with House Bayenry, vile Matron Jindia has little chance of finding friends, and so no hopes of prevailing. And Dumweel is no Lothian. It was the sword that drove her to evil deeds, we know that. Being freed of it, conquering it, will perhaps bring her to a place of desired redemption. And that place will be back in Menzo Berenzon, in House Barriss and Delarmgo. Dumweel might help us avoid a war. Is that not a chance worthy of our efforts? Isn't that—
Yes, Jarlaxle, we know, Zachnafane interrupted him.
And yet you should have told us all of it, Caddy Bree said angry.
From the moment you asked us to accompany you. The very notion that there was a place akin to Caladay up here is rather important, don't you think?
Jarlaxle replied with a slight nod. What could he really say, after all?
It doesn't matter now, Entreri put in. We found it, and know more about it than any old elf in Silvery Moon might recall, yes?
Agreed. And so it is settled, said a sardonic Zach. Caladay exists. He lifted his glass in a toast. And glad am I that it does. Per te, mia Caladay. The others smiled at that, but didn't toast.
I agree with Jarlaxle's assessment of our hosts, Caddy Bree said, bringing the topic back to the original discussion. They will not hold us here, for they are not jailers and have no designs to do us harm in any way that we have seen. Quite the opposite. But it makes sense that they will hold many of our memories of this place.
As long as that's all they demand, Entreri said. Though I have to admit, it is a painful price. I don't want to forget Caladay.
The Avendrau will do as they must, Caddy Bree decided. They have a lot to lose, everything to lose.
You could take us home now, Jarlaxle said, right now, and we could return, with Drizzt even. Should he not see this place before it all becomes but a dream to us?
I cannot.
We will come right back, Jarlaxle assured her. Dumweel is out there, and she is important to our cause. Even if Caladay were not here, it is worth our attempt.
Caddy Bree shook her head. We cannot.
Why? The surprised Entreri asked.
I am in no rush to be away from this place. I rather like it, but why can't we?
For one, we have our own obligation to them. We must take them to the cave where we fought the Green Slod.
The others nodded.
And we will, with even more help.
We can come right back to the north and fulfill that obligation, Jarlaxle repeated.
We can't. She was almost sighing at this point. I don't understand, Jarlaxle said.
I am unable to cast the spell, Caddy Bree explained.
But the Twilight Autumn is over.
No, it's not that.
I'm not allowed to remove us from this place, on my word and my acceptance of Galathay's Geas.
Her what? Entreri asked.
A Geas? You accepted a Geas? Jarlaxle asked.
I had little choice, but yes, I did, and would have even if offered the choice.
Entreri held up his hands at a loss.
It is a magical prohibition, Caddy Bree explained. The spell would not execute to take us home even if I tried, for the Geas, much like a curse, would prevent it. There is no way around it.
I can't believe you let her do that, Entreri remarked.
I wouldn't have cast it anyway, Caddy Bree answered him. I gave her my word that I would not cast it, and I'll not break my word.
Still, Entreri said, staring at her, his expression catching her strangely. She could almost see him playing it all out in his thoughts, and watched, as his initial resistant surprise seemed to be melting away.
Then we have to let it play, he said after a moment.
Then let's go kill some frogs, Zach said.
After a few exchanged glances, Jarlaxle nodded his agreement, but the old rogue also rubbed his face.
He was calculating his options, Caddybree realized. As he always did, this land of Caladay was everything to him, as she knew it would be to Drizzt. She wondered then if perhaps Jarlaxle would not return with her and the others when this was all over, and would instead choose a life here among the Avendrow. What would that mean for her memories of Jarlaxle if their theory about the Avendrow ritual proved accurate? She couldn't help but give a little laugh at the prospect of Jarlaxle the Rogue becoming no more than a confused dream to her and Treri and Zacnaphane. The thought of the ever-present Jarlaxle somehow being wiped from their minds seemed impossible. There was no magic in the multiverse powerful enough to do that, Caddybree expected. Not with Jarlaxle, whose sheer presence mocked such a possibility. Jarlaxle started to say something, but went quiet abruptly and looked toward the inn door past Caddybree. She turned to see Galathay approaching, wearing a familiar gauntlet. She removed it as she arrived, dropping it on the table in front of Entreri. "Quite remarkable," she told him.
"I warned you, or your friends at least, out in the rift. I hope no one ignored that warning and held or even touched the sword without the gauntlet."
Galathay smiled and reached over her shoulder with her now bare hand, lifting a familiar sword up and over. "Quite remarkable," she said again. "You were wise and kind to offer such a warning." She widened her gaze to take in the others. "You do carry some powerful magic, and some with designs of its own. Evil designs, or wicked at least." It didn't escape the notice of any of the four friends that this paladin drow so casually held Karin's claw in her bare hands. Only a powerful and veteran warrior could hold Karin's claw unshielded from its malignancy. The sword had no sway over her, it seemed, a keen reminder that many of these Avendrow were even more formidable than the southerners might have thought.
"I do not put it to evil use," Entreri answered her. "Once I was a prisoner to the power of that sword, when it was wielded by a Shadowvar tiefling. But now," he shook his head.
Galathay studied him for a moment, then very deliberately laid Karin's claw on the table before him. As she reached to unfasten the scabbard set across her back, Entreri put his bare hand on the backbone-like hilt of the wickedly beautiful sword and lifted its decorated red blade up before his eyes. "The Inquisitors argued over whether we should return the blade to you at this time," Galathay admitted, handing over the scabbard, "or substitute a white ice sword and wait to give this back until your ultimate departure from Caladay."
"I understand your concern."
"I was the tie-breaking vote among the Inquisitors, who were tasked with deciding the fate of your various magical items," the paladin told them all. "Pray you do not prove me wrong.
The only ones who will regret your choice are the giants and the Sladai," Entreri promised.
"So you do plan to join us in the coming fight? I was told as much by Alina and Emelian."
"We do," Caddybree answered.
"Gladly," Zack added.
"That is why I came to you now, and I am pleased to hear of this."
Galathay pointed to a nearby chair.
"May I join you?"
"Of course," all four replied, or at least nodded. "I will tell you all that we know of battling the Sladai and the giants in tactics and in the most and least effective magic to use against them, both to attack and to defend. These are lessons long and painfully learned by the peoples of the North." They all leaned in, particularly Caddybree and Jarlaxle.
"Tell us, friend," Zack said, "how we can kill these awful enemies."
A large party of Avendrow, Aurochs, and Kurit shadowed the four southerners from Shellobel through Kaskat and down the tunnel, out of the glacial rift and back toward the mountains. Night remained deep about them, the sky cloudy and hinting of snow, and no merry dancers were shining above later on that day's march when they came into the dead Ulutian town. There they found the calved ice block the glacier had thrown at them.
"Near the glacier, we will be careful with Zack's whip," Caddybree told Alina and the others.
"And I will be careful not to reach through my ring." As she finished, she held up her hand and rolled the ring about on her finger.
"Until we are far away," the nearby Azudana replied.
"Even if you think us to be safe from Khadija's response, the force following us is large, and may have support groups trailing distantly and still within reach of Khadija if you anger him."
"Of course.
I saw groups of dwarves bearing heavy litters, she agreed. The cave will be cleansed, Azudana said, as if that explained the burden of the dwarves. She moved away then, called by some others. Dwarves and orcs accompany us. But I have seen no humans other than myself and Artemis and Treri, Catibri mentioned to Alina as they continued on their way. This is no business for Aluteans. We are in the mountains, and so they are not needed. I noted none in Catskalchi either. Fighting, I mean. Those Aluteans who have joined Caladay do not believe in battle, Alina explained. They are fine hunters, or were, but they are not warriors and do not wish to be. It is not their way. I doubt they would raise arms against the giants or even the Slaadi if they invaded us in Caladay. They would not protect their homes? Not in battle against reasoning beings, Alina explained. I don't think it general among their peoples, but for this tribe, such things as war are forbidden. Yet you value them as citizens, Catibri asked, as much as stated. Of course, Alina gave a little smile. Many think their beliefs aspirational. Perhaps if the practical necessities weren't ever present, we would all seek their peaceful ways. Besides, you will see, they are quite important, even if they will not lift weapons. They are not needed here, but if they were, they would be here, certainly. Catibri let it go at that, thankful for yet another little look inside the Avendrow, layer upon layer of confirmation that all of this experience was exactly as it seemed. They moved through the town and along the mountain trails, the four outsiders retracing their course, even breaking for rests in or around the same caves that they had previously used. Several snowstorms slowed the journey, but with their magical protections and the strange clothing of sealskin, white fox, and hag mucus worn by the others, which seemed as good as the boots or rings, their progress continued. Deep snows were rare up here, just a few, if any, big storms each year, but the small flurries came repeatedly. Or maybe it was just crystallized blowing snow. Catibri could not be sure. The moon was up and nearly full in a bright and cloudless sky 10 days later, when the targeted cave came into view. The four friends were very near where they had first come through Gromf's gate, and Catibri noted that Jarlaxle, in particular, seemed to be continually glancing all about. He was setting markers, identifying peaks, she knew. Even if the Avendrow cast their ritual and dulled their memories, Jarlaxle intended to get back to this place. She couldn't blame him. They set one last camp near the cave entrance, the large force, nearly 200 strong, catching up and breaking into their assigned assault groups. After the Kurid sneak to the entrance and check it structurally, we will be the first to enter the cave, Emelian told the four as they ate their dinner. You four, myself, Alina, Galathe, Vessi and Azudana. Once you have shown us what we need to know to direct the fight, then you can move back to this place where we'll stage an infirmary. We asked to remain at your side, Azudana said, noting herself and Vessi. We will return to this camp with you. But we won't be returning to the camp, Zack said, before Jarlaxle could reply. I won't, at least. I was down in the lower tunnel and remember it well, so I'll be of help. And if the frogs and giants are still there, well, all the better. None of us will remain in the background, Catibri said with confidence. We are seasoned warriors all and know each other well. Two, I ask that you don't remain with us, my friends. Stay with familiar comrades. We've perfected our own style, Jarlaxle added. He looked right at Galathe, whom he had been told would be leading the expedition, and who was now coming over to join them. If there are objectives you wish us to meet once the fighting starts, just point them out and take confidence that we'll get it done. Just you four? Galathe asked skeptically. Five, Catibri corrected, lifting the onyx panther figurine from her pouch. Six, said Jarlaxle, tapping the feather on his huge hat. Maybe eight, if there's room for hellsteeds, Entreri put in. Galathe looked to her fellow Avendrow, none of whom had any answers to the claims of the four. This is our fight, Galathe said. You need not. Then it is our fight, Catibri insisted. Perte mie calade, said Jarlaxle. Perte mie calade, he said again, this time with the voices of his three friends echoing every syllable. Indeed, said a nodding and smiling Galathe. Sleep well, and prepare yourselves.
Artemis and Treri crept into the cave, hugging the right-hand wall, scanning constantly for any signs of movement, both from other shadows and from the large body of the frog-like green slod lying on the floor right where they had fought it and left it. All was quiet, not a twitch from a webbed foot, nor a flicker of movement from the creature's four-fingered hands. Patience, Entreri silently reminded himself. He squatted below a jag in the wall, tucked tight in the shadows, and he waited. And he watched. Sometime later, he crept out from the wall, staying low all the way to the corpse. And yes, he confirmed, it was that same corpse all these 10 days later, showing the same wounds inflicted by the very sword Entreri now carried. It hadn't decayed much at all, because of the cold, he knew. Back to the wall he went, then he crept all around the chamber and even down the descending tunnel. All was quiet. Entreri moved back outside. The slot is dead where we left it, just inside, he told them. All else is quiet, well into the tunnel. Maybe they deserted the place, Zack offered.
The corpse still being there means nothing, Galathea answered. Slodi care nothing for their dead or for each other.
The room of the eggs was far below, Zack added. A few hundred strides down that tunnel, then down a great stairway and along yet another corridor.
Any turns or side passages? Galathea asked.
Not many, and nothing to confuse. Large steps down to a straight run to a single fork right before the room. But both ways from the fork led into the chamber, although the tunnel to the left might have had another branch.
Galathea nodded to Emelian, and he ran off. Then let's be done with this, the paladin told those remaining. To the four newcomers, she added, you are certain you wish to engage in this fight?
Right up front, Jarl Axel answered.
Galathea motioned to the cave entrance.
Zaknafane and Entreri led the way, the Evendrow paladin and Azudonna close behind. Catty Bree, Jarl Axel, and Elena trailed, while Emelian organized a second strike group to move in as reinforcements, as well as a team of Kurit with a litter to collect the long-dead green slod. Down the tunnel they went, silent as the shadows, silent as death. They came to the descending stairs and continued to the flat, straight tunnel below. And Treri and Zaknafane crept up to the fork, the red glow from the chamber beyond evident. And there Entreri held, sword and dagger now in hand, while Zack moved back the way they had come, a short distance. When their companions came off the stairs and into the flat tunnel, Zack motioned back to Galathea, pointing left and right.
Which or both? Zaknafane's fingers flashed at her in the drow code.
Galathea glanced over her shoulder and flashed some hand signals that way, then turned back and silently told the point runners, left.
Zack moved back to join Entreri, and they started down side by side. They paused almost immediately, though, hearing movement ahead. The room wasn't empty. Zack turned back, his fingers working fast to relay the news.
How many? Entreri heard in his thoughts,
and he recognized that it was Catty Bree who had sent the silent magical message. He crept forward, paused, then moved again. Several huge forms were shuffling about, including a trio of giants lifting and turning eggs. While it didn't seem so huge near the towering frost giants, he noted a slod, hulking and thick and blue and nearly twice his own height, then a pair of slightly smaller and leaner red slodi farther to the right. He related all back to Catty Bree with the connection of the message spell, then added that there was at least one more down the deeper hallway from this nesting room, for he heard its croaking call to its fellows. He moved back to Zaknafane, who relayed to Catty Bree, put a fireball in there to start the fight. A few moments later, while Jarl Axel, Azudonna, and Galathea moved up to join the pair, Catty Bree and Elena remained back at the tunnel fork, waiting for Emelian's squad to arrive. Elena sent them off down the right-hand tunnel, her fingers relaying the information while Catty Bree began quietly casting her spell. The five in the tunnel ducked and covered as one when the small ball of flame soared over them, flying into the room beyond. A wash of heat swept past, accompanied by screams of pain and great gurgling croaks of surprise.
and Trarian Zacnaphane led the way, diving into roles as soon as they reached the room's entrance, crossing paths in those dives to confuse the nearby enemies, and coming up shoulder to shoulder, leaping away as one for the nearest giant, which was frantically trying to balance a huge egg in one hand while it patted at the biting flames with the other. The giant reached for its axe, which leaned against the wall to the side, but then brought its hand back across to block a stab from Zack. A cut from Kazidea. 3 giant fingers and half of its palm went spinning to the floor. The behemoth reacted without thinking, hurling the egg at Zack. Zack ducked, rolled forward, and turned as he went, stabbing Kazidea downward on the turn and leaving the sword sticking up from the floor as he rose into a crouch facing Entreri, his hands cupped before him. Hesitating not at all, Entreri rushed forward, stepped into those cupped hands, and leaped away, Zack propelling him up and over. Both hands gripping the hilt of Karin's claw, Entreri drove it home with all his strength, the fine blade slicing through the thick hide jerkin and stabbing deep into the giant's gut. Entreri could see and feel the behemoth's skin smoking and curling away from the wound, and knew that the giant's innards were faring no better. He was glad that the gash widened itself, for he slipped free and down, ducking fast as the giant slapped at him, then reached for him. The crack of a fiery whip straightened the giant and sent it falling back a step, reflexively grabbing at its burned face with both hands, then howling again and tucking its half hand under its other arm, trying to stem the spurting blood.
"Behind you,"
Entreri told the weapon master, for the egg had hit the floor, skipped to the wall, and bounced back, but now with a cracked shell. A blue creature that looked like a weird cross between a baby dragon and a giant centipede had pushed through the compromised shell and now swayed very near to Zack, toothy maw coiling, ready to strike. Jarlaxle approached in measured steps as he watched the opening charge of his 2 lieutenants. Even though it was all so perfectly predictable, he was still shaking his head in awe. The coordination, the improvisation, the precision of Zack and Entreri, although typical, could never be less than amazing to him, even though he himself could have joined these 2 experts and been complimentary to their movements. He managed a little smile when he heard the slight gasps of appreciation from the 2 drow beside him. He planned to fight this battle with a pair of wands, mostly. But since this first giant was already getting ripped apart, he began with his conjured throwing daggers, 1, 2, and a 3rd, as Azudana and Galathay rushed past him into the room, veering left. He noted the egg flying past Zack and held his 4th shot when the weapon master came up in a turn with his hands cupped, realizing that Entreri would soon be leaping up high. But then Jarlaxle let fly that 4th dagger when the serpent appeared from the cracked egg. Azudana and Galathay were already around the corner, out of sight and out of range of the serpent, and there, Jarlaxle heard, another fight was already beginning. Around went the weapon master to Entreri's call, only to find the hatchling too close for his whip, its head up high and swaying, then snapping forward, maw spreading wide, fangs pointing from either side. Zack growled a curse and tried to get away, but only a thrown dagger saved him from a vicious bite as it clipped the hatchling's head and deflected the strike wide. A quick rush to the side brought Zack past Kazidea, which he pulled free as he spun back on the serpent. He cracked his whip at it and it hissed, but the fire didn't hurt it. He did it again, cutting the tear, letting the opaque magma drip down before the beast, which struck again, its face plunging right through the hot residue. If the heat bothered it at all, it didn't show it. But it didn't matter, Zack saw, for the magma was upon its face, upon its eyes. It shuddered and swayed, trying to get free, but Zack came in fast. Cutter slashed across viciously, and the creature and the breaking egg rolled to the side, the hatchling falling in half and both ends squirming wildly about on the floor. Zack didn't see that, but confident in his strike, he had already dismissed the serpent as a threat. For there remained a huge frost giant, wounded and angry, not far behind him. An arrow of lightning soared right over him as he spun, and he turned just in time to see the giant stagger from the impact. But still it roared and pressed on, gathering its axe, taking several more hits about the legs from Entreri's sword and dagger, taking another arrow, then a 3rd. Yet it kept coming. The behemoth answered with a great sweeping swing at Entreri, but a flare of light flashed between the combatants, surprising the giant and giving the man enough time not only to get below the strike, but to come up behind it and drive his sword into the bending behemoth's side. Zack came in, snapping his whip at the giant's face again and leaping into a tremendous downward slash with Cutter that finished off the giant's injured hand, stealing its grip, the huge axe spinning out to the side wildly. Another arrow struck home. A flying panther crashed in right behind the lightning missile, landing fully on the giant's head, bearing it to the ground. In went Entreri and Zacnaphane to finish the brute. Jarlaxle nodded his appreciation to Alina when she placed the warding flare between Entreri and the giant. Brilliant, he told her, and he realized he might as well have been speaking of Azudana and Galathe. If any doubts remained in Jarlaxle about the power of the Avendrow after Catskalchi, and after the paladin so casually handled Entreri's sword, they were thrown aside in but a few moments of watching the two brilliantly working about a giant, Galathe with sword and shield, Azudana spinning a sword and short spear combination with such deftness that Jarlaxle wondered why such a weapon combination was so rare in Menzo Berenzon. The masters at Mele MacThair would learn a bit from this one. And those white blades, ice so tightly compressed as to be unbreakable, enchanted and treated with such skill, drew bright lines of blood all over the frost giant they faced. For all that skill, Jarlaxle understood that the two could use his help, and he rushed in support as a second giant came up on them, along with the blue slod. A brilliant light appeared in the eyes of that second frost giant, blinding it, as Alina joined in and Catti Bree, too, turned her attention here, Heartseeker raining shots above the drow fighters and into the huge giants. Now with wands in hand, Jarlaxle called upon the magic in a ring, magically blinking through a short dimensional gate that landed him at the back of the room to the side of the growing melee, and with the three massive monsters in a perfect line. One wand, then the second, sent a powerful lightning bolt shooting down that line, scorching all three. Jarlaxle nearly laughed aloud when Azudana cleverly leaped forward behind that flashing blast, jabbing her spear at the blinded, outraged giant who stood in the middle. At the same time, she gracefully and fearlessly danced between the giant and the slod. The giant reacted with a great sweep of its axe, but Azudana was far too quick to get caught by that. The surprised slod, however, did turn with her. From his new angle, Jarlaxle could see the fight across the room, Emelian's group battling fiercely. He breathed easier when Entreri, Zack, and Guinevar joined in with Azudana and Galathe, and Catti Bree kept her line of lightning arrows flying true. Behind Catti Bree, Alina bided her time, picking her magic. A silvery spectral hammer appeared in the air beside the slot and immediately engaged, and when that slod managed to clip Azudana with a claw, sending her into a defensive roll out the other way, her wound began to knit almost immediately. Alina's magic, Jarlaxle realized, and he was glad. The Avendrow knew what they were doing against these enemies, clearly. If they won out here, he was confident none of them would leave this fight infected with the Chaos Phage. The mercenary reached for the feather in his cap, but just shook his head and moved on, picking targets. The diatrima wouldn't be needed, not yet at least. The pair of red slot eye fled the fight down the tunnel at the back of the room, and Jarlaxle went in pursuit. He turned the corner to see them fleeing, but also to see, with the magic of his eye patch, a second pair of slot eye, almost identical to the green beast they had killed on their first journey to this place, cloaked in invisibility and standing on either side of the wide tunnel. The mercenary skidded to a stop and reversed, putting his back to the wall and motioning to his friends. Zack and Entreri rolled away from their fight, which the Avendrow by then had in full control, and toward Jarlaxle. Catti Bree came too, her bow working with every stride, pummeling the unblinded giant most of all. As the two warriors quickly approached, Jarlaxle put both wands in one hand, motioned to the tunnel entrance, and showed his friends two fingers. He pulled something from his pouch with pinched fingers and reached about, throwing it into the tunnel. Around went Jarlaxle, a wand in each hand, the air before him filled with glittering dust that outlined and clearly showed all four of the slot eye within. The corridor flashed twice with shocking blasts of lightning, and Jarlaxle flipped the wands, holstered them, and brought daggers into his hands that elongated into swords as his three friends joined him. The red slot-eyed tried to get forward in the fight to fend off the fury of Entrarian the two drow, while both green slot-eyed began casting. But the friends knew what to expect and had already been protected from fireballs as they had seen them used in the first fight. And Catibree, too, was casting as she arrived. Swords rang out, and then they didn't, and a whip cracked loudly and then silently. The battle raged in complete and utter quiet. The green spellcasters, their dwyamers lost in the muting silence, tried to flee, predictably, but Gwenevar leaped far and high and bore one down beneath her. Catibree hit the second square in the back with an arrow as it half ran, half hopped away, obviously trying to get beyond the radius of her silence spell. And then it was clear, and turning and casting. Only to catch a glob of green goo right in the face, the slod tried to claw it away, sputtering. As Jarlaxle was still in the globe of silence, his laugh could not reach its ears. That slod turned and fled. A red slot fell, its face cut in half by Karen's claw. The other turned and tried to get away, but Zack was with it, step for step, then Jarlaxle too, stabbing it over and over until it stumbled down, while Entrary helped Gwen finish the green-skinned monster. Catibree, still back in the room and outside her spell of silence, turned and leveled Tolmeril, picking her shots. She found few opportunities, though, for more drow and dwarves and orcs had joined in the fight, the few remaining giants and slodai being taken down under the furious, coordinated assault. Catibree put away the bow then, and turned her attention to her wounded allies. And there were many, Galathea among them, though the paladin continued to battle, her shining blue sword almost fully red from the blood of her enemies. The battle wound down quickly in the room and in the tunnel, with Jarlaxle and Treri and Zack running off after the fleeing green slod and Gwen returning to Catibree's side. The woman moved about, casting her spells of healing and restoration where needed, where there seemed any possibility of disease or of injected eggs. She kept looking to Alina for confirmation, and the Avendrow priestess kept nodding. "Take no chances with any wounded by a slod," Alina called to her, as Galathea had instructed her back when they had first set out. "Cure an infection, whether you think there is one or not." Catibree nodded and went at her work with fervor, fueled by her memories of Zack's brutal trials. She hoped, she could only hope, that her spells would be enough. One poor dwarf writhed about, having been stepped on by a giant, and the Avendrow priest working over him had no spells to deal with such a brutal injury. Catibree nudged him aside, closed her eyes, and called to Mialiki for her greatest healing gift. She held the dwarf steady as the magic flowed between them, as the waves of warmth flowed through him. When she let him go, he was no longer writhing, no longer gurgling in agony. He looked at Catibree with sincere appreciation. She kissed him on the forehead and thanked him for his courage this day, promising him that he would fully heal. When she stood up, she felt a hand on her shoulder and turned to see a smiling Alina. "Come," the drow told her. "Galathea is resting." They started away, but Catibree stopped and motioned to the far wall, to a giant who was sorely wounded, but still stubbornly struggling against heavy silk cords that were being wrapped about it, holding it down and helpless. When it began to scream, one of the orcs walked up to it and slapped a handful of goop, hagfish mucus, Catibree believed, over its mouth, but pointedly kept it clear of the behemoth's nose. Scanning the rest of the room, Catibree noted drow moving about, stabbing falling slodai with their white swords and spears, and checking fallen giants to make sure they were truly dead. Others ran the shelves, collecting the surviving eggs, placing them in secure boxes set on some of the litters. "A prisoner?" Catibree finally asked when she and Alina moved near to Galathea, who was leaning against the wall. "We need some clarity on what this portends," Galathea answered. She pointed to the original battle in the room, to the baby creature cut in half and lying dead on the floor. "It looks like a Remorhaz," Alina said. "The polar worms, yes," Catibree agreed. "This is a dangerous turn," Galathea said, her gaze locked on the giant. "We'll get our answers from that giant." "Then what?" Catibree asked. I saw no giants among the folk of Caladay. Nor will you, was all Galathay would reply. When our priests and wizards are done interrogating him and scouring his thoughts, he will be mercifully and quickly dispatched.
Caddy Bree wasn't about to argue.
She looked to the giant, fully bound now, but still kicking at anyone moving too near, even throwing itself over at one point in an attempt to crush an Avendrow under its bulk. Caddy Bree turned to the now quiet tunnel, diving farther down into the mountain. Some Avendrow were there, discussing options. She moved past them, seeing the three fall in Slaughti. She heard a shout from far below. The Avendrow came past her, weapons ready. Go to Zagnefane, Caddy Bree instructed Guinevere, and the panther leaped away, rushing past the surprised Avendrow and down into the darkness.